through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
This hour, Tom, Jake, and Stacy is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. Guys, I don't want to complain, but the studio is currently freezing. It's 72 degrees. I can't feel my feet. And that's all I have to say. I know. Freezing.
Well, can't you change the thermostat in there?
I'm trying to press the button, but I can't make it go higher than 72. Probably because as soon as I make this go higher than 72, my dad will somehow walk in here out of nowhere and be like, did someone turn up the heat? And I'm going to be like, how'd you get into my office? What's going on? All right. We're going to go through some of the plays of the game. Some of it's going to be fun. Some of it not so fun. But we're going to talk about some of the stuff that we noticed. There's plenty to take away still. And let's get started. It makes sense with the first play of the game, Tyler Lockett's diving one-handed catch.
Shotgun snap. First play, Russell's going to throw. Looks going to throw it up deep. Got a man out there. Lockett reaches up with one hand and makes an unbelievable catch just outside the Arizona 35-yard line. One play, one highlight film. Tyler Lockett with a huge catch. One-handed, what a reception.
It was so incredibly well covered by Peterson, a 34-yard reception for Lockett. No idea how he caught that. Everyone else, including Peterson, looked surprised, Jake.
Oh, that was an unbelievable catch by Tyler Lockett. And if anything from last night, Tyler Lockett showed on a national audience, do not overlook me again. Don't call me underrated because I'm just as good as anybody in this league. Tyler Lockett put on an absolute clinic from the very beginning.
Is underrated a patronizing adverb or adjective?
No, because I think I get why you would say that, but Tyler Lockett is underrated.
I don't know if he is anymore. Five years in the league, I think enough people, at least that I've heard on the broadcast, acknowledge how great he is because it's obvious. I think he's a known commodity.
What about on when you watch, you know, Good Morning Football or any like NFL Network segments or whatever? When I'm watching national coverage, the conversation is DK Metcalf. So much so that when we did our preview of this game coming into it, and one of the questions was who's leading the Seahawks in receptions, multiple people texted in DK Metcalf. That wasn't the answer. It was Tyler Lockett.
And I did. And I answered DK Metcalf.
I think not to throw you under the bus there, Jake.
Yeah, that's okay. You can throw me under the bus. Okay. I can take it.
Shame on you.
Shame on me. Gosh. But, you know, you look at Tyler, I don't think he's a known commodity around the league. It's like he's one of the first people that you think of. He's definitely not. And I believe, DK Metcalf is more of the first person you think of in Seattle across the country than Tyler Lockett. And I think Tyler Lockett woke up a lot of people to remind them that, hey, it's not just DK. I'm here too, and we've got one of the best wide receiver duos in the entire NFL.
And that wasn't just with his 200 receiving yards. It was also with his 3 touchdowns, the first of which came on this drive.
Russell this time under center. Here comes the blitz. Russell's going to roll left. He's going to dump it out into the flat. It's touchdown! Seahawks! Tyler Lockett, who tosses the ball up into the empty stands. What a drive by the Seahawks. Opening drive right down the throat of Arizona, and then a little dink pass into the flat on the left side. Tyler Lockett scores at 6-0 Hawks.
Seahawks get there with 6 plays. It takes 75 yards and just over 3 minutes to get down there, finishing it off with a 3-yard pass to Tyler Lockett. You guys, this was the Seattle Seahawks offense at its best.
No, it was unbelievable. I mean, it was cooking. It was rolling. I mean, Arizona couldn't do anything to stop it. You had a couple nice runs mixed in there with Chris Carson. I mean, this just looked like an absolute domination that was about to ensue. And part of the conversation in which I talked about, give the Seahawks the best chance to win is to start fast, and they certainly did that.
Looked like it was going to be a rout, mm-hmm. right? We mentioned this earlier. The Seahawks were doing everything right, even the defense. On the first possession, I think it was, for Arizona.
Yes.
Did they get run out the field? I think they did. Yeah. So it
felt
3
and
like, out. Oh, right. It felt like all the predictions about how this is going to be a close game or a tie, low scoring. No. We're going to blow this one out like 38-10. Nope.
Seattle takes a 10-0 lead before Kyler Murray finally finds DeAndre Hopkins for a 35-yard touchdown. Don't worry, we're going to get back to that a little bit later. You have Jason Murray that hits a 41-yard field goal, then a 44-yarder. Jason Myers, guys, MVP. Just perfect this season. Has he only attempted, like, two field goals ever this year? Yes. Is it really two? No. But he's been phenomenal. Then you have this. Now, it is weird that a highlight is an interception, but take another listen.
Russell takes a shotgun snap. Carson, oh, no! It's picked off, going the other way. Is Buda Baker down the near sidelines? Nobody's going to catch him unless Metcalf can. He is sprinting. He is running. He dives, and he catches him. DK Metcalf catches Buda Baker on a little dump pass into the right flat. Russell never saw him, and he steals the ball away.
There's a lot of really obvious reasons that Pete Carroll called this one of the best football plays he's ever seen. Not just in his life, in his years of coaching. He's been coaching since the early 70s. Part of it is the phenomenal speed and athleticism you saw from DK Metcalf. I mean, that guy was bolting down the field, hit 22 miles per hour at one point. But I think the more important part, I'm guessing, to Pete Carroll, and Jake, I know you can speak to this, having been part of his practices, is the effort. In practice, effort matters. Going all the way down the field to go into the end zone after you, you know, break free of a touchdown and not quitting at any point, even in practice, all of that matters. And you see guys pull up in those moments. You see guys decide it, you know, where there's 5, 10, 15 yards to go, I can't catch this guy. DK Metcalf decided to stop him, and he did.
It's unbelievable, and it's the mark of being a true teammate. It's the mark of I think selflessness. And one of the other things that I was talking with Brooke about that particular play is the fact that it wasn't like the ball was to DK Metcalf, right? The ball was to DK. He was right there. He was a part of the play. No, he was away from it. And most people, when you see Buda Baker, who's 20 yards downfield ahead of you, there's no chance. And DK put his head down and went after it and hocked him down, going over 22 miles an hour. Absolutely insane to catch Buda Baker. This is a play that will live in Seahawks lore. It's a legendary play, and it's a play that will be shown not only in team meeting rooms years and years to come with Pete Carroll, but also many other coaches, many other kids across the country for years and years will see this moment, and this is a moment of being a selfless teammate.
Did you guys see that video the other day of the leopard chasing that guy? He was like filming it, and the leopard, or was it
oh yeah the cougar yeah
oh I thought that was from Tiger King. Oh, wait. No.
Oh, the leopard. Yeah. I know what video you're talking about. Okay. Yes.
It came out like just last week, whatever it was. DK was like that leopard. Just, okay, it's inching. It's, oh my God, it's really coming at me. Like, I can't believe it's getting to me so quickly. I mean, that's how fast he ran. He ran on that play. And again, DK is blessed with this unbelievable physical skill. When you take your God-given gifts and you maximize them in that way, selflessly, for your teammates, that's what makes everybody else better around you. They see people give an effort like that in any business, not just football. But you see people around you give an effort like that, it makes you better. That is an incredible play, and I hope the ripple effects from that are felt down the line.
Is that how you guys feel when I make my puns? Like, me at my best using my God-given gift, making our show better, is saying stuff like, Jared looked a little goth versus the 49ers.
No, that's more like Russ throwing the pick.
Okay, you know what? Let's go ahead and get to the next play here. We're going to keep this going, Curtis. Then you have the Seahawks defense keeping Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals from getting into the end zone, despite being already in the red zone and being the second best red zone offense in the NFL. Phenomenal stop by them. Then the Seahawks march 97 yards down the field. It's capped off by this 24-yard touchdown run by Carlos Hyde.
Toss left side, goes Hyde, got blockers out in front, turns up field, first down, down the sidelines, he goes in, touchdown, Seahawks! Carlos Hyde turned the corner and just ran away from everybody. A 24-yard touchdown run, and the Seahawks now 19-7, leading Arizona.
Him tightroping the sidelines like that was impressive. At 230 pounds, him running like that, that is great body control. But who makes that play? Dwayne Brown. Dwayne Brown's athleticism on those tosses, I mean, it's unbelievable at his age. And I know people were talking about, well, you need to find the next answer. I think Dwayne Brown's still got a couple of good years of football still left in him. This guy works tirelessly. He still has all the athleticism you would want in a left tackle. He's still getting it done at a high level. That play was so fun to watch, not just because it was a touchdown in Carlos Hyde, but seeing big Dwayne Brown out there on the perimeter.
Metcalf actually gave a nice block on that play himself. Al Michaels was totally clueless as to what had happened on that play. Like, he figured that Hyde stepped out of bounds like 20 yards before he was in the end zone. And it was he was talking about something completely unrelated to the play. And like 10 seconds after the touchdown graphic went up, Al was like, oh, and there's a touchdown by the Seahawks. Thanks, Al. By the way, I thought Hyde filled in admirably for Carson. There's a big difference between those two. Carson yards after contact.
Difference.
I mean, yeah, you could. The difference was noticeable, but Hyde still did okay, I guess, in his stead.
The Cardinals respond with a 7-yard touchdown from Kyler Murray to Christian Kirk. Then, with 51 seconds to go, just before the half, it's another touchdown for Tyler Lockett. This one, 47 yards, and one of the best touchdown catches I've seen. One of the best deep balls I've seen from Wilson.
Russ takes the snap. Looks, going to let it fly. Downfield, Tyler Lockett is out there. Lockett makes a catch in the end zone. Touchdown, Seahawks! How does he get open? How does he do that? Tyler Lockett is amazing. And the perfect pass from Russell Wilson, a 47-yard shot. Before halftime, 47 seconds left, and a perfect pass. Lockett with his second score of the night.
Oh, man, that was an absolute dime.
Russ threw that like a javelin.
Yeah. Moonball dime is what we're going to call that. That was an absolute beautiful ball. And Tyler splitting the defenders, running past Patrick Peterson, running past Buda Baker to make that catch. I mean, those two are on fire right now. One of the more deadly combinations in the league. And you just look at the completion percentage and the quarterback rating that occurs when Russell targets Tyler Lockett. It's out of this world. And that play right there was just... Honestly, when that play happened, I thought game over, match done. It's over from that play forward, but it wasn't.
I feel like we could just do this highlights thing for the rest of the show if we wanted, but I just want to point something out because we talked before about Russell throwing the three picks and, you know, how damaging is that? Can you win a game? I mean, I'm looking at the notes that I made last night. The possession before this, Russell had a big run that ended up setting up the high touchdown. On this possession that led to the bomb there, Russell ran for 25 yards to midfield, made another pass to Lockett. Then Lewis gets called for tripping, backs him up 10 yards, and then Russell makes that throw. Like, Russell was actually amazing in this game outside of those three picks. And that just, again, leading to 34 points. I just want to make sure that that doesn't get ignored, that, you know, his bad game, in quotes,
right,
is remembered for what it was, in fact.
Yeah, and at this point, the Seattle Seahawks were entering halftime. You've got a score of 27 Seattle, 17 Cardinals. The Seahawks have 19 first downs to Arizona's 11. The Arizona Cardinals are just 1 of 9 on third down. Seattle already with almost 400 total net yards. They've got 377, 127 of those on the ground, 1 of 2 in the red zone. It's been a fantastic day for them. And to be honest, like, statistically, it remained a fantastic day on offense, with the exception of the interceptions. We'll get to two more of those later and in our highlight section. But so far in the first half, you're looking at a strong game from Seattle. You come back into the third quarter, not much there for Seattle in the third. Kyler Murray scrambles for a 5-yard touchdown to make it 27-24 Seattle. You get to the fourth quarter, you have another interception. This time it's Patrick Peterson in the end zone on a pass intended for DK Metcalf. Then, next play, the Seahawks defense comes up with something to give it right back to you. It's Quandre Diggs.
Play fake to Kenyon Drake. Kyler Murray looks, throws, the ball's picked off. It's Quandre Diggs missing his receiver intended, I think, for Andy Isabella. But Diggs is the man there and trading interceptions. The Cardinals first. Now the Seahawks taken right back.
If we're talking about limits for this defense, this would have been it, right? You've had an interception that was brought down to essentially the 10-yard line. You get to the 5-yard line, and the defense gets you a 4-down stop. Then you've got another interception where Quandre Diggs comes up with a big play. I think that's like the limit for this defense right now. They got you 2 big plays to get out of a situation. You can't get much more than some of those moments. Asking for 3 big plays from a defense that's this inconsistent is a lot. It was a phenomenal play by Quandre Diggs, a bad decision by Kyler Murray, great timing to get back on the field and give you the chance to win it again, and they do get in there for a touchdown. But if we're looking at like what's the limit to what this defense can do as far as how much you can count on big plays, I think that's it. Right?
You're right. And you know what? That in the pace of the game, with all that considered that you just said, it looked like it was going to lead to a Seahawks win because of that, all in tandem. Like, hey, Russ in the offense, yeah, he's throwing picks, but they're playing well. They're lighting it up. Defense is making just enough plays. It looked like that was going to be able to pace them to about a 10-point win before everything fell apart, and we'll get there in just a second.
Yeah, you look at this, they drive the ball down the field, right? They capitalize on that turnover there, and they get this Tyler Lockett toe-tap touchdown on 4th and goal that was absolutely amazing.
Russell takes the shotgun snap, has some time. Blitz is coming. Russell's going to lay it up over the top. Lockett makes the catch. Did he get his feet in? Touchdown, Seahawks! His 3rd touchdown reception of the game, if it stands.
Going on the field has been changed to a touchdown.
I didn't understand that. Why would you change it to a touchdown? The guy that was actually there, who saw the play happen in front of him, called it a touchdown. And then somebody else who was far removed from that said, no, it's not a touchdown. They overturned their original call. I didn't understand that. But luckily, it was clear as day because Tyler Lockett, we call it pro feet. Pro feet, being able to get your 2 feet inbounds, toe tap, unbelievable job by Tyler. 34-24, 10-point lead, 6 minutes left to go in the game. This should have sealed it. This should have been the moment that was the nail in the coffin.
If you're unsure as to whether or not it's a touchdown, especially if you're standing right there, you call it a touchdown, let him review it in the booth. Not let this other official come and like overrule you and then force Pete to challenge. I mean, that's completely bass-ackwards.
And we've got an update on Chris Carson from Ian Rappaport we're going to get to in just 1 minute. I'm going to say it's not awful news. It's not a worst-case scenario. So hang on just 1 second for that. You've got the 4th quarter just kind of falling apart for Seattle as you close out. Benson Mayoa being flagged for leverage against a field goal attempt. That turns into a touchdown. Carlos Hyde stopped short. Seahawks forced to punt. Zane Gonzalez hits a 44-yard field goal to force overtime. Here we are in overtime. The first missed potential game-winning opportunity with a missed field goal for Arizona.
Here we go again from 41. Kick is away, and he misses it! He misses it! He made it the first time. He misses the second time, and the Seahawks are still alive. Oh, man, he's iced by his own coach. He kicked it through, and his coach had called timeout, and now he gives the Seahawks a chance to come back and win another one, stealing a victory from the jaws of defeat. Let's see what Russell Wilson and company can do right here.
Rabel speaking for Seahawks Nation, right? Because he's thinking, we're all thinking it. Oh, well, we got that miracle that we always get, like in Minnesota a few years ago in the playoffs. And now we're going to get the ball. We're going to march right down. Oh, we don't even need a touchdown. All we need is a field goal. That's definitely going to happen, right?
Correct. And you give Russell Wilson a second chance at life, you think that this is game over. But the reality is that the way that the Arizona Cardinals defense was playing, they were giving the offense fits. They were giving them trouble at the line of scrimmage with their pressure packages, offensive line not handling them very well. DJ Dallas, poor guy, not being in these situations before. You really wish you could have had Travis Homer, who would have cleaned up that protection. And then obviously Russell Wilson getting surprised a little bit, and that led to an unfortunate interception here. Russell Wilson getting picked off by rookie Isaiah Simmons for the third INT of the game.
Now the ball in Seattle territory, and just a quick throw, and it's intercepted by Arizona. Russell was just trying to dump it over the middle, and the ball is picked off by Isaiah Simmons right in the middle of the field. With 1:04 left, the third pick thrown tonight by Russell Wilson. I'm not sure what he was thinking or who he was throwing to.
Well, I'm going to tell you what he was thinking and who he was trying to throw to there, Rabes. This was one of those situations where you thought that you had a seam, that because they're at the line of scrimmage and crowding the line of scrimmage, that there's a seam right behind them where you can catch and rip it right through the seam. And Tyler wasn't looking. It was a rush decision by Russell Wilson. It was a poor decision by Russell Wilson, and a mistake that you rarely see. So it was truly unfortunate to see that mistake being made in that critical of a moment.
Then, of course, you have Zane Gonzalez hitting the 48-yard field goal to win it in overtime. Look, we're going to spend plenty of time. We've got the rest of the show to break down exactly what happened in this loss, maybe some silver linings from it, what we're looking at moving forward. We do have some injury updates. Now, a lot of those will come at 3 p.m. That'll be during Bob, Dave, and More. Pete Carroll speaking to reporters then. Before he speaks to reporters, though, we have an update from Ian Rappaport of NFL Network. He says, source, Seahawks running back Chris Carson, who left the game early, had his MRI, and it showed he did have a midfoot sprain. He's week to week, an indication he'll miss some time. So TBD on whether or not he'll be placed on IR. As a reminder, IR this year can be just 3 weeks, so it doesn't have to be a season-ending deal for Seattle. But, guys, quick reaction here. I'll go to you, Jake, for this one. Is this good news, all things considered? It doesn't sound like you're missing Carson for the year. Obviously, more news to come from Carroll, but...
Yeah, obviously we'll wait to listen to this, but if it's week to week, I'll feel a lot more comfortable about this. But, you know, anytime you lose Chris Carson, I think it's devastating for your offense. Chris Carson is an X factor for this group. He really is the thing that keeps this offense all together. And so to have him out for any games, especially coming against the San Francisco 49ers, definitely not ideal, and they're going to have to find a way to replace some of that production.
All right, what went wrong for the Seahawks in their loss to the Cardinals, and what can they fix before this upcoming game? We'll talk about that next in the Halftime Show.
It's time for the Halftime Show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The Halftime Show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Welcome back into Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Let's recap what we've gone over so far. We'll go ahead and get started with the obvious question and the one that isn't so fun to answer, but we got to do it. Why did it get away? Why did this game get away from the Seattle Seahawks? They scored 34 points on a defense that's been allowing just 18 points per game from opposing offenses. It was an otherwise fantastic performance, minus 3 interceptions. So why'd it get away? I tend to look at those interceptions and say, hey, no matter if you have an MVP quarterback, and you do, right now Russell Wilson is the MVP of this league, with or without this game, getting over 3 interceptions is tough. Jake, what'd you say?
I think it is tough. I think it is absolutely tough to win when your quarterback throws 3 interceptions, and I believe that despite throwing 2 of them in that game, they should have won. They should have had a chance to win that game. And right now, on this Monday, we should be celebrating the Seahawks being 6-0 and being in a commanding lead in the NFC West division. But the reality is that the Seahawks couldn't slam the door shut despite having multiple opportunities to do so at the end. That's why they didn't win this game, and quite frankly, that's why they deserve to lose. 6:44 left to play in the fourth quarter, up 10 points. They kicked themselves with stupid penalties on a field goal. They tried to run the clock out to finish the game. They can't. Seahawks defense couldn't come up with a stop. And Russell Wilson, the offense, had 2 chances to win in overtime, and they didn't get it done. And that's why we're sitting here saying the Seahawks are 5-1. So we knew they weren't going to be undefeated throughout the entire season. I'm not in panic mode. I'm just more frustrated. I'm more mad because every win, every opportunity to get a win is precious, and you can't let them slip by like this.
To answer the question directly, like what went wrong, mm-hmm. how to get away, everything. Everything happened. The Cardinals hung in there, first of all. Kyler played well enough. I thought he had a pretty good game overall. He's still a young player. Their defense, as the game went on, just had a huge impact. It forced Russell to make at least that one mistake on the final interception. The offensive line had no clue what was coming at him late in the game. I thought Russell played a phenomenal game for the most part. I'm not going to discount the three picks, obviously. But as far as the way that those first two picks impacted the game, they really didn't. I mean, they took points, potential points, off the board for sure. Otherwise, they would have had, what, 48 points, I guess? And the defense actually came through to kind of negate them. The Diggs interception and also the four stops in the red zone. Terrific job there. But, you know, that final one definitely killed them. Defense can't contain anything. They have all kinds of problems. They need Jamal Adams back in the worst way. I'm not sure how much he can do on his own, but certainly they're better. Penalties, like some of them were bad calls. Some of them were just the Seahawks doing themselves in. There was a lot that went wrong. I thought it was a total team loss. Honestly, I thought that they were outcoached. I thought that the offense, you know, again, Russell didn't do quite enough. Did a lot, didn't do quite enough. And the defense was their usual selves, except even worse at times, because they didn't come up with as many big plays as they usually do.
Next story. We talked about whether or not this loss forces the Seattle Seahawks to be honest about their flaws. So naturally, we talked about what are the fatal flaws? What's the fatal flaw for the Seahawks defense? And the question that obviously goes to is, can they win a Super Bowl with it? Can they win a Super Bowl despite this flaw? Do they have to make a move in order to win a Super Bowl? Jake, you said that they're going to have to make a move. Tom thinks that they can win a Super Bowl with this defense without making a move. I'm leaning toward they don't have to make a move, but that is very, very dependent on what they look like with Jamal Adams. Jake, I'm going to let you go first with saying that you think that they'll need to make a move. Who should they be looking at? And, I mean, what kind of guy do they need to add?
50 dropbacks, one pressure. One pressure, zero quarterback hits, zero sacks. When you look and dissect that, just that stat alone from this last game, when you play legitimate, good teams, playoff contending teams, you have to be able to affect the quarterback and at least cause some disruption. Get him off his platform. They were not able to do that enough. And I think that that's why I say no, they can't win just with this group. Unless they really come together, unless they really start playing a different style and brand of football, they start playing more of a physical brand of football, I think that they'd still need a pass rusher to help them. And the three guys that I would identify and try and figure out how to get them on your team is J.J. Watt, Carlos Dunlap, and Ryan Kerrigan. And people who wonder about J.J. Watt and the way that they can get him and make his cap, you know, hit work and his pay work, there's multiple ways that they can make this work. I won't get into the details, but those three guys can work as to how you can get them on their roster, and they need it.
I think they can still win a Super Bowl because in the end, though, their offense is so prolific that they'll end up winning more games than they lose. It's just going to come down to the matchup. I mean, if they're in a matchup with, I don't know, the Chiefs, for example, that might be a problem. But if some other lesser team sneaks in there, like, say, I don't know, the Raiders or something like that, I mean, they could win that game. So it's a little early, but I still think that they can win a Super Bowl, even with what they have. Now, I hope that they add something. Again, picking up guys off the scrap heap, it's probably not going to make that big of a difference, but they should definitely be on the phones right now trying to do something.
Yeah, there's four guys from their original kind of plan for the defense that are currently gone. Marquise Blair, out for the season. Jamal Adams, out but expected to return as soon as next week. Bruce Irvin, out for the season. And Daryl Taylor on the NFI list, unsure whether or not he'll even be back this year. There are two guys that have a chance to come back. Jamal Adams and Daryl Taylor. Adams is the likeliest candidate of the two to make it back soon. And not only that, but to make an impact. When I look at the defense as they originally planned it to be, I do see a middle-of-the-road defense. I see a defense where it's like, you have enough talent with Jamal Adams and Bobby Wagner, and I'll throw KJ Wright in there too, to lift up all the other guys around you. What would they look like with Bruce Irvin? What would they look like with Marquise Blair, who Jake was expecting to be the third best player on this defense? I mean, Jake was there in camp watching these guys. They had a lot of promise for a reason. They don't have some of those guys right now. It is not the plan that Seattle had heading into the season. So what move do they make, if any, to try to fix it? Because this wasn't plan A or maybe like A through D. Like, they might be into like, okay, what do we do now? I think that getting Jamal Adams back might be enough. I think it might be enough of your original plan to try to lift up everyone else around you. If you don't get him back, or if he can't do it, you have to add someone, because that's your only hope right now. He's Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I hope so. He is. He is your only hope. He is your only
hope. Quite literally,
hope. And let's,
your only
let's
hope.
Hope that, let's hope he can come back. And don't forget Snacks Harrison, too. Snacks Harrison, you hope that he can make enough of a difference as well. But, I mean, gosh, I just truly believe that they need another pass rusher for them to make a significant enough difference for this defense to become a complete team. And that's all you can hope for.
All right, don't forget that this hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. You had some really funny reaction to DK Metcalf's chase down of Buda Baker last night. We also have some injury update about Chris Carson and from some players around the league. That's next in the timeline.
This is The Timeline
with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It's The Timeline on Tom, Jake, and Stacey, reading you the top trending stories you're going to see throughout the day on your own Twitter timelines. When you see any you want us to include, go ahead and tag us at JTHeaps9, at Stacey Rost, at Tom Wassel. Jake, was 9 the number you wore when you were in high school?
Yes, it was. It was the number I wore all through youth, all through high school. That was my number. That was my swag.
Got it. Got it. If I could choose my own number, I don't think it would be 9. I think it would be 1.
No, it couldn't be 1, Stacey. We've been over this. You're too petite to wear number 1.
I think
1.
I could make
That's
it
not,
work. I think I could do it.
No, you couldn't. Yeah. It would be too big for your body. It just would not have the same swag.
Too...
You need an 11. It's too much of a vertical number.
Like
a 2, maybe a 3, 7. 7 would be a strong number. But
7
1,
would be just, okay.
Stacey, I like that you asked what Jake's jersey number was in high school. And
yes.
In his picture on the stream is one of his high school jerseys with his number right behind him.
Yeah, the friendship I have with Jake is 90% just messing with Jake and 10% saying, oh, yeah, that's a good point. Good point. Good points were made. All right, let's get to the timeline. You had, obviously, the highlight of the game came on like a really weird moment of the game, which was DK Metcalf chasing down Buda Baker, who was streaking into the end zone after intercepting Russell Wilson. You had really, really solid reaction on Twitter, by the way, from that moment. First, before I do this, let's go ahead and go to the play-by-play first.
First and goal. Russell takes a shotgun snap. Carson, oh no! It's picked off! Going the other way is Buda Baker down the near sidelines. Nobody's going to catch him unless Metcalf can. He is sprinting. He is running. He dives and he catches him. DK Metcalf catches Buda Baker on a little dump pass into the right flat. Russell never saw him and he steals the ball away.
Stephon Diggs saying, oh, he's running. It really was like next level. Bobby Wagner making a joke. I would say something about DK's hair, but when you're that good, you can do what you want. Do you, young man? DK dyed his hair pink. Guys, that was phenomenal. I mean, Seahawks Twitter had plenty of reactions. People were in awe of it. It is so rare that the moment we are talking about in a game is this moment, but that's exactly what this was, Jake.
Oh, man, it absolutely was. And I think that a couple other funny tweets to speak of, I think, was one from our own Curtis Rogers, kind of pointing out that Curtis Rogers, he's a weird guy in our office, you know, but always has the best swag. I saw a lot of tweets out there talking about, you know, hey, if there's, when mom brings donuts home or saw somebody else when a relative tries to steal the turkey leg from me, you know, the reaction that they have. I thought they were all fantastic.
I saw one from one of our engineers, Zach Davies. He actually put it on Facebook. I don't know if he did it himself or if he took it from somewhere else, but it was just a still photo of Baker and Metcalf right behind him, and over Baker's head, the word me, and over Metcalf's head, 2020.
I saw one I didn't, which is really funny. Actually, I'm going to go ahead and leave it with that one. That one's the best one. Cleveland Browns wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. has a torn ACL. You guys, that news came over the weekend, his season officially over. The Cleveland Browns have kind of, I don't want to say quietly surprised everyone. They're a team with a lot of big personalities, Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham Jr. being two of those guys. So everyone's always watching them, but they're also doing really, really well. This news, a devastating blow for that offense. They obviously still have weapons, best run game in the league right now, but that's sad news for Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah, very sad news for one of the game's best, but there was something that was floated out there that I am going to be curious to see.
Is it a conspiracy theory?
Like, it is, and it'll bring you back to the Jimmy Graham days, unfortunately. But they said you know, Baker Mayfield threw for five touchdowns in that game after OBJ went down. That they're saying that maybe this is a good thing for Baker Mayfield, that he's not having to worry about Odell Beckham Jr.'s prima donna personality on the field and having to feed him the ball, that now he can play better. I don't agree with it, but I'll be interested to see how it plays out, because people here in Seattle, if you remember, in 2016 or 15, I believe it was, when Jimmy Graham went down, the Seahawks offense went on this huge, you know, tear, and Russell Wilson was playing unbelievable football, and everybody blamed Jimmy Graham. Oh, he was the reason this offense was being held back. So
people blame Jimmy Graham for everything. It was so undeserved. It was when the offense does well without him and he suffers a season-ending injury, it's his fault.
You know what? I was thinking about that very thing over the weekend. With Jimmy Graham, the reason why you can't blame him is because he played well, right? He did his job when he was on the field. He scored a ton of touchdowns for them. The problem was having him there, a guy with his skill set, you know, the fact that he really couldn't block it, and focusing the offense around him wasn't the best way to maximize what they had. It was just the wrong fit. But that doesn't mean that he didn't do his job when he was there, so it's twofold. As far as Beckham is concerned, I want one person besides me to acknowledge 3 years later now, 2 years later, that the Giants and Gettleman trading him away was the right move. Now, they're not any better, but if they still had him, okay?
Wait,
because
hang on.
Listen, they have 100 other problems besides Odell Beckham Jr., but trading him away was the right thing.
I'm not giving you that. No.
Why not? He's
the
always
answer
hurt.
Is no.
He's
the thing with Jimmy Graham too. It wasn't that. It was people got mad at Jimmy Graham for not doing what we knew he wouldn't and couldn't do. That's what people are mad at Jimmy Graham about. Is that you knew he wouldn't be able to block and potentially, like, not wouldn't be willing, but just, like, it's not his thing. It's not his vibe. Vibe check, does not want to block. And then you got mad at him for not doing it. I also think that if he was someone that was very friendly with media, the way Luke Wilson is, I think people would have warmed up to him. I think the fact that he didn't talk often, if ever, and tried to avoid a lot of interviews because he just wasn't very open, I think it stirred a lot of that kind of public conversation about him. That's just my two cents on that. You got two injured players from last night's game, at least two running backs from either team. The Arizona Cardinals, Kenyon Drake suffered a high ankle sprain. He's expected to miss a few weeks. That from NFL Network's Ian Rappaport. Rappaport also gives an update on Chris Carson. Chris Carson left the game early. He said that his MRI showed he did, in fact, suffer a midfoot sprain. He is week to week. Quote, an indication he'll miss some time.
Was it this year or last year that I asked the question, do you worry about Chris Carson week to week and his availability?
This year.
It was this year.
Because his durability is the biggest question people have about his play. You know he's tough. You know he can play. He's got great hands in the pass game when you do use him. He's a great player. His durability is what people questioned about him.
Right, but that when I asked that, I feel like the answer was no.
Yeah, because I said no.
Charlie, I know you too.
But... Well, with Chris, durability is always something that is there. I mean, anytime you miss games, you know, every year consistently, I think that it's a question. Now, is it a fair one? I don't necessarily think so, just because of how much wear and tear he actually, you know, has to go through in a given year, in a given in given games. But also, you look at Derrick Henry, and he gets just as heavy, if not a bigger workload than Chris Carson is able to keep himself healthy throughout the year. But that's just a different physical freak in and of itself. But I'm grateful that Chris Carson isn't in a 4 to 6 week injury time frame. As of right now, it's a week to week time frame. We'll see how long it actually ends up being. But this offense needs Chris Carson. That is very clear, very evident as of last night. And it doesn't mean that, Mike Salt came on and was like, "Hey, you know, this group, for all the let Russ Cook people out there, you can't forget about Chris Carson." And you're right, because he is the yin to the yang. He is that guy who can add that punch, that physicality to this offense.
Is Penny coming back to practice soon?
Pete Carroll this morning on Danny and Gallant said not this week for Penny or Daryl Taylor.
Okay.
So.
Because
not this week.
All right, but if Penny comes back and he actually finds his way into a game and Carson's still hurt, I mean, yeah. God forbid, but let's just say that means we get to pull the Rashad Penny bust conversation out of mouth.
No, I know you love having that, Tom. I will not allow it.
Well, I mean, it's going to be relevant.
Oh, no, it will. All right. By the way, we're going to have injury updates. It'll not be during our show. It'll be during Bob, Dave, and Moore. Pete Carroll speaking at 3. I'm confident people will ask him about Chris Carson, and we'll ask them whether or not they'll make a move there if Travis Homer is also out. So, again, that'll be coming up during Bob, Dave, and Moore in the 3 p.m. hour. Coming up next, we're going to talk about what caught our eye. We've each got 3 things we noticed, little points in the game. We're going to go over them with you next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.